Welcome to Legal Talk with Attorney Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Auto accidents, DUIs, slip and falls, each one can change your life. But the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys at Flesh and Beck Law relieve your legal burden. Whether you need to heal from an injury or protect your future in a criminal matter, the legal team at Flesh and Beck Law is prepared to defend your rights. Now, here's Legal Talk with your host, Scott Whatley, and attorney Kevin Flesh.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Whatley. We are so glad you are with us today. Our show is brought to you by Flesh and Beck Law. Their number 303-806-8886. And it's always good to have our friend in Kevin Flesh in studio with us. Kevin, good to have you again, sir.
Thank you. It's good to see you.
Everything going good?
Yeah. You know, it's been a very interesting last month or so. All of the courts, for the most part, are up and running with jury trials. And so the criminal side of our practice, criminal defense side, has been a little strange because we've got trials that I think are going to go that don't because they're not in the highest priority. And then I've got other trials that I think will probably hold off and that they're lower in the priority list that get bumped up to do it. So we've been very busy in that respect. And then also getting some cases where they're close to speedy trial or close to they have to try the case and getting some really good offers in the situations where I'm a little concerned about my client's guilt and what's going to happen with the case. So, yeah, it's been really good and things are progressing well. And jurors are back at it. They're doing the good work that jurors do, and the courts seem to be like Denver has been really interesting in the sense that their jury trials, they can only bring in so many people for their jury panels. Mm-hmm. So they've been bringing jurors in on Fridays and Mondays and Tuesdays. So from a planning standpoint, it's been a little strange because if you have a Friday trial, you may go on Friday, or if you're higher priority than all of the cases on Monday, you may go on Monday. Same for Tuesday. I know this because I actually had a civil case that was supposed to start last week on Monday. All the criminal cases took the jury panel, so civil cases didn't go on Monday, and then Tuesday the same thing happened, so we had to continue. Wow. So the criminal cases, they're going to get all of those cases that have sort of been waiting to tried, and then I think the civil cases will happen later this summer in the fall and into next year. Mm-hmm. So from the standpoint of the court system starting to really gear back up again and bring people in to make some decisions about cases, it's happening, which is good.
Do you think there will still be some of this Zoom, you know, kind of calls for a while just because
it's interesting. Yeah,
it is easy.
It is easy.
And like the other day when we spoke, you know, you'd done like four or five deals in a couple of hours, yep, which you could never do if you had to drive to all the different locations.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think, so I was talking to a judge in Arapahoe County yesterday, and he didn't know what the status of what Arapahoe was going to be doing. Other jurisdictions, such as Adams, I've talked to the judges there, and they're all in on the pretrial matters and doing things via WebEx is really what most of the courts are using. I think that's going to continue just based upon my sort of anecdotal data and talking to judges, because there are some things that can be done really easily and efficiently in both the county court and district court when you can do it virtually like that. Okay. And it saves time for us as lawyers. Mm-hmm. It also is efficient for the court, especially if you are showing up, let's say, for an entry of appearance, and all you're really doing is showing up and showing your face and getting a new date. Those sorts of appearances should be really simple. I had one before, this week, for example, where we're showing up, entering a not guilty plea, and setting the matter for a jury trial. All of those sorts of things can be done remotely. There's a lot of pleas being taken, especially in the county court realm, where you're not looking at any jail or prison or community corrections, where the person is not going to be taken into custody. The courts seem to be willing to do all of those via WebEx now. Now, you've got to have the ability for them to see your face. So the defendant has to be seen in most jurisdictions now. So you can't, most jurisdictions are saying, you know, when you take a plea to a criminal offense, I don't want you to be on the phone and I only have your voice, that they need to see you. Mm-hmm. But a lot of those things are happening, and they are. They're much more efficient, especially for the individuals. We're getting a lot of cases resolved where the people are out of state, where possibly before the pandemic, they wouldn't have had the resources to come back and personally appear, or the personal appearance would have made it more difficult for them to resolve the case, where we're able to have them appear virtually now, resolve the case, not have to worry about a warrant, take care of the things that they need to take care of where they're living in another state. Mm-hmm. And it's really quite efficient and good for the defendant and for the other parties involved in this, you know, the state prosecutors and everybody else.
Sure.
On the civil side, I had a mediation yesterday, and we're doing most of our mediations by Zoom, and it actually, in talking with my client about it, it has been an interesting progression relating to that, because I didn't think initially when we started doing mediations virtually that they would be very productive, and what I found is just the opposite, actually. Mm-hmm. That the mediators, the way we normally start mediations and the way we have mediations is, in the case of a plaintiff, the mediator, which is normally a retired judge, will come in, meet with you, talk with you about what's going to happen on that particular day. You're in a separate conference room from the other parties, and you have a nice conversation about the process and then about the case and about how my client is doing, just getting a sense of who they are, making sure that they're comfortable with what's going on the particular day. Well, all of that can be done virtually through Zoom, and it's, you know, I've got a big screen in my office that I have client and I sit in front of the screen, and just like we would be there, and so the mediator does that work with us, and then when we're done with that, we sort of talk about an offer to start the day, and then they go off just like they would have before in person. Instead of walking down the hallway, they just have a breakout room with the other folks in the other side of the Zoom call. They have that same sort of dialogue. You hang out, and then you come back, and you then dicker back and forth a lot of times about the positives and negatives of the case, and then about money, because that's what it ends up being about. And yesterday, for example, where I thought we would end up, we ended up, and we resolved the case. And we resolved it normally in regular times where we would have met in person. I think we probably would have taken us a half a day, and it took us a little bit less than that yesterday. And then electronically, the mediator at the end of the mediation has you have you sign an agreement. Both sides have an agreement that you signed to settle the case. We did that electronically, and it was done. Yeah. So from that standpoint, we're learning a lot of things and doing some really good things in progressing in the environment we're in. And so my client was happy. So this is a case. She had a car accident from 2018. Had some treatment through the end of 18, beginning of 19. We filed suit in last spring, but it was continued and continued. We had to reset the trial, I think, in January of this year, because we still weren't doing jury trials at that point, and we set it for December of this year. So December of 21, the accident happened in August of 18. And so she hadn't been treating for the last 2 years, had been healed and everything else. But she, you know, we could have gotten her a little bit more money if we were able to go to trial in December. But the opportunity costs and the risks, it just wasn't worth it. Yep. She resolved the case. And so it's one of those things that's really nice to get those cases done for people, especially in that situation where they don't have lingering issues, where they're not looking for future needs and all of those sorts of things. They just want to get the case resolved. They really don't want to go to court. They just want to have a fair resolution, and that seemed to happen yesterday. So that's a good example of how we're using electronics these days to get things done.
Wow, amazing what we can
do. Yeah, isn't it? I mean, you think about the pandemic, even 10 years ago, if we had had something like this happen, it really would have stopped a lot of people from doing things, especially in the legal field, because I don't think we had the technology that we would have had now. You think about the infrastructure you need to have people have a smartphone, especially on the criminal side, where they've got to have the ability to have a camera, to have a video, to be able to, so the court could see them. You know, if we didn't have that, I think a lot of times the court would have been uncomfortable moving forward last year in March and April. But as we've learned about it and figured things out, it's been wonderful to really be able to practice that way. And I think it's going to change the way we practice in Colorado, especially in the criminal defense side, because I think it'll be a little bit more convenient for people not having to go to the courthouse, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope it is. I hope that, some of the conversations I've had with judges is that there are certain aspects of the cases that they feel like people don't take as seriously when you're talking in a virtual environment. And so I think some of those sorts of situations, the court just will order the people to come in person versus virtual. But a lot of the cases where they don't have that concern, I think they'll be willing to allow people to do that and appear, and especially lawyers appearing that way. If they're in some other jurisdiction for some other reason or something else, it'll really help us and manage our calendars and things like that.
Right, sure. Once again, you're listening to Legal Talk with Kevin Flesch, and it's brought to you by Flesch and Beck Law. Once again, Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. All right, our remaining time here, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what do you do when you make a claim against a victim of a car accident, and you're traveling maybe in a company car or driving somewhere for work, Kevin, and we can even bring in the Ubers and all the other different taxi services and all the different things like that. So how does that change from just being in a personal car?
Right. Yeah, so it's been really interesting since, you know, I don't know about you, but I do still do some driving around the metro area, and traffic is considerably more than it was last year. It's interesting how quickly you get comfortable with fewer cars on the road. But there's definitely a lot of cars on the road and all times of day. And there still is a lot of the Uber and Lyft and all of those car services out there doing that work for people. And so it's a little bit different when certainly when you're a passenger in one of those vehicles. There's a couple of things that happen with regard to the claim that you make. You'd think you'd just be able to make a claim against Uber or Lyft, but in reality, that's not really what happens. You make a claim against the driver of the vehicle, who's basically an independent contractor for those companies. And then that driver has to have insurance on their own. You want to make sure that insurance covers them doing that sort of work, because a lot of policies that don't allow that rideshare sort of conversion, that they won't cover for those sorts of things. So what has happened is Uber and Lyft also have a secondary insurance that covers them as well, because even though they have this relationship, this independent contractor relationship with their drivers, they still know that not all of their drivers who say they have insurance are going to have it, and so they cover themselves as well. And so I've got a case right now, for example, where my clients were in the back of an Uber and the Uber driver hit a cow. And it's just the strangest case. Yeah, it was a cow in Douglas County in the middle of the roadway. And so we've got a bunch of different things going on there. What, you know, who owns the cow? How did it get out? Why didn't the Uber driver see the cow? I mean, it's a really interesting case, but it highlights the issues that you have with these ride shares in the sense that you've got to make sure that you're claiming damages on the correct individuals, and it's primarily the driver of the vehicle that you're going to first start with, and then work your way through the independent contractor issues and all of the insurance that's involved with it, because it depends on each company. And then you'll want to make sure that the insurance policy for the driver, let's say the driver has American Family, you'll want to make sure that American Family contract that he has will cover him, that he's not rejected once they find out that the claim is related to a rideshare sort of environment.
Because they may have not have told their insurance they're doing this.
That's exactly right. And so you may get a rejection soon into your claim. I've had those situations too. And then you have to go after the bigger company, the Uber, Lyft, or whatever the people were working for, and they should have secondary insurance. So you've got that. And generally, both of those policies will cover your claims unless it's a significantly dramatic injury and you go beyond those two limits. And if you do, then you've got your underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage. And remember that underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage is coverage within your household. So it's any family member that owns a vehicle in your household may have coverage for you. And so if you have multiple vehicles with multiple insurance companies, you can stack that UM/UIM care coverage when you make a claim. And that's that UM/UIM coverage is the same whether it's your personal vehicle or whether you're in another person's vehicle and making a claim saying that you weren't fully compensated by the at-fault parties.
And I guess, you know, if you get a serious accident, and let's say, you know, I mean, we all just, you know, a few times you see the driver, who it is, and you get a license plate of what kind of car.
Yeah.
But let's say then you get in an accident, ambulance comes, takes you away. I mean, you don't know anything except that license plate and that driver.
Yeah, and you know, if the ambulance is showing up and taking you away, you know the police are going to be there and they're going to get an information, and there's going to be a police report done. I mean, I very rarely see that's not the case, and we're able to get those police reports and figure out who the insurance is and who it is that is going to be responsible. Because you may have a couple of different parties in that scenario, the driver, the owner of the vehicle. There may be other cars involved. There may be some other reason that the accident happened. Cows, whatever, you know, those things happen where you just have to get that police report and figure out what exactly took place, and then figure out what you can do to get to all of the coverages that you have relating to the at-fault parties.
Sure. Now, switching that over to our work, let's say you work for a delivery service or something.
Exactly. So let's say you're the Uber driver, and you're just driving around. You don't have any passengers, but you're driving, and someone hits you. You're now in a situation where you have a workers' compensation claim because you're on the job at the time. Similar to you as a salesperson, that you're working for a particular business and you're out driving around for sales calls, and that particular employer gives you a vehicle for your work. The first thing you want to do when you start that relationship with that employer is you want to make sure who's covering you while you're driving that vehicle. You'll want to make sure that the employer has coverage, both for liability, underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage, and regular insurance for yourself in case you need it. And if you don't, then you'll want to make sure that you have coverage under your own policies for your own vehicles that you do own that will supplement that coverage. Third thing that you'll want to make sure of is that your employer has workers' compensation and that you can make workers' comp claim in the event that you're hurt in an auto accident. A lot of people don't recognize the fact that when you're driving around for work purposes and you get in an auto accident, your first claim should be for workers' compensation. And then you can use that insurance to get all of your medical taken care of, your lost wages and things like that. And then they have a subrogation right later when you make a claim against the at-fault party. There was a Supreme Court case that just came out within the last week that's really pretty interesting relating to that. That's going to affect those sorts of cases in the sense that if you have a significant car accident and you use your workers' comp carrier and you get all of your medical bills and your lost wages taken care of, that workers' comp carrier has the ability to make a claim against the third party at-fault driver as sort of a subrogation interest, but they can make that independent of you.
Oh, okay.
And so you've got those are situations where we have this sort of event happen in your life, and you've got an accident, and you've got significant injuries. It's a really important part of the case to get to a lawyer right away so that they can talk about that.
Now, as workers' comp, you get money from them. Is that ever any money you have to pay back for anything?
Yes.
Once you get
pursuant to statute, there's a statutory lien that they have, and because of that, that's where you need to resolve that lien, and you want to resolve it with them before the at-fault party does. Because, for example, the case that just came out, the workers' comp carrier covered all of the medical expenses, and it was pretty significant. It was close to $100,000. That lien holder, I think it was Pinnacle or somebody else, one of the workers' comp carriers, negotiated with the at-fault party to get their lien paid. They didn't do it through you as the person that got hurt. They went directly to the source of the money, and they resolved that with them prior to the plaintiff, prior to the at-fault, or prior to the person that got hurt going to trial or making a claim. Well, it turns out that when the subrogation interest, when the workers' comp carrier does that, then the person that got hurt doesn't get to use those damages in their claim for personal injuries, and it minimizes the amount that they're able to recover. And this Supreme Court case basically said that if that third-party insurance carrier comes in and takes care of that subrogation interest underneath the plaintiff's nose, then those damages don't come up in trial. And it's really a big deal.
No.
And it's where, in those situations, there has to be some planning about what the plaintiff is going to do to make sure that they get those things taken care of right away so that they can use those damages at a trial. Because if you don't, and those are the only medical damages you have, it could significantly impact your right to compensation in front of a jury or at a mediation or whatever.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Kevin Flesh is with us. You're listening to Legal Talk. Once again, our show is brought to you by Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. The website is fleshlawfirm.com. That's FLESCH, lawfirm.com. And it's always a free consultation. We always want to remember to tell you that. So no matter what your legal issue may be, if you'll just call and mention you heard Kevin here on the show, again, always a free consult. Now, what trouble does it give you? Let's say the person that quote caused the accident bolts and leaves, and you know there are people around that saw it. Oh yeah, it was a white Ford truck and they took off. I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, the phantom vehicle is difficult. You hope that you get some good information about the identity of the person in the vehicle or something relating to the vehicle so that you can track it down and the police may be able to find them. There are a number of times where the police do a really good job in locating that vehicle later, especially when there's damage to the vehicle and they can find it. But if they can't, then you do have a situation where you want to make sure that you can document that you just can't find the person that caused the damages and you have underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage because that's really your only option at that point. If you don't have the UM/UIM coverage on your own auto policy or someone in your household that's family doesn't have it, then you don't have the ability to go after any insurance. But if you do, then all you have to prove is that that vehicle fled, that there's no way to prove the identity of the vehicle or the driver, and that you're now making a claim against your own insurance for underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage. And then the claim is identical to a regular third-party, at-fault party liability claim. So you'd be making a claim against your own insurance company, and some people have some anxiety about that. They say, well, I don't want to make a claim against my insurance company because my premiums are going to go up. But that's why I get that. Right. But it's a very competitive environment out there relating to car insurance. So the carriers right now are probably not going to raise your rates substantially if you make a UM/UIM claim because that's what you've been paying it for and that's what it's for in the event that you have a phantom vehicle that hits you or you're not compensated by an at-fault party substantially enough that you still can make a claim against your own insurance. And so I hope people can get over that and then they make a claim. The little tricky parts are the family members. So I've had these cases where mom and dad have a couple of cars, adult son or daughter are living with them, and they get into a car accident, and they're not compensated completely by the at-fault party. And then we start talking about UM/UIM coverage, and it turns out mom and dad's coverage could cover son or daughter as well. Because they're still living together. And, you know, some people have a little trepidation about that. And why should I use my coverage for my son or daughter? and it's because that's what the law says you can do.
It's insurance.
And but you still have to prove, one of the interesting things with that is you still have to prove that you were living together at the time of the event, whenever the accident happened, and that you are truly family. And so I've got a case right now where that's an issue as to whether or not my client was living with his mom at the time. And so it's one of those things where we're really having to take a look at it. And there's probably going to be, you know, an actual deposition about where exactly he was living so that the insurance company can make a decision about that.
Gotcha.
Yep.
So what happens in an accident is caused by something falling out of a vehicle or it's not, you know, clear where it came from.
Yeah.
But, I mean, let's say, you know, truck. Ladder falls off a truck, you run over. I mean, do you chase the truck to go find them? I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, you've got to find out who exactly the stuff came from. I had a case a long time ago where my client had pretty significant injuries from, it was exactly that, a lumber truck that had a 4x4 piece of wood, and it was a pretty big piece of wood, maybe an 8-foot section of 4x4 that came off the back of the truck and then was rolling down the highway and hit her and disabled her vehicle and caused her vehicle to crash and run into the barrier, and she got hurt. And it was really unusual because, you know, the argument would have been, well, couldn't she get around that debris in the roadway? And she couldn't. It just happened so fast. And she wasn't able to get information relating to the vehicle. So she made an underinsured, uninsured motorist claim. And her insurance covered it. But if she had gotten that information and figured out who it was, you'd then be making a negligence claim, saying that you didn't properly tie down the item, the ladder or whatever fell off of the vehicle, and that because of that, that caused a dangerous condition, and it caused you to be impacted, and it also caused you injury. So that's sort of how you would make the cause and effect stick, and they would have insurance for that. Right. And you'd cover it. It would be just it would be almost like a regular auto accident case at that point.
Boy, I don't know if you saw this recently on the news, but I believe it was on C-470, motorcycle accident. A gentleman and his wife, they hit a pothole.
Yeah.
Lost control of the bike, and then is there anything you can do about these potholes?
Yeah. So there. Yes. So the potholes are a really interesting legal claim that we probably could spend a whole segment on. But suffice it to say The Colorado Supreme Court has said that the maintenance of the roadways isn't always a dangerous condition, and that there are certain circumstances where it may be allowed, but the majority of the time, the government is immune from suit in those situations. Mm-hmm. I've got a case right now that I'm thinking about filing suit on, about someone that's on a scooter in the bike lane in downtown Denver, and Denver is redoing part of the street. They didn't close the bike lane, but they basically cut out part of the street, and there was a big hole in the bike lane, and my client ran into it and was injured. And so it's going to be an interesting process, because I think it's one of those things where the law isn't exactly clear on these issues. I went to trial a couple of years ago on a similar case up in Adams County, and the jury didn't find that the government was responsible. But I think it's still an argument to be made that they should be making reasonable repairs to the roadways. Right. And this is the time of the year where we see it, where we've got this freeze-thaw, and it's just blacktop, and they need to get out
some
there.
Some of them are deep.
Yes.
I mean,
like shake your. I mean, you're driving a pickup. I'm right. driving a car, and there are times where I hit a couple of these where I'm like, oh, did I lose a wheel?
I know.
And those are significant enough. I think that's where I think the government should be held responsible, mm-hmm. because especially if you can prove that they knew about it and they didn't immediately fix it.
Sure.
It doesn't seem to make any difference. They should be out there patching those things so that we don't have those issues.
Yeah. Well, as we mentioned, it's always a free consultation at Flesh and Beck Law. And we didn't mention this in this segment, but Kevin always says, no matter how minor the accident may seem to you, call the police and get them there, get that report where everything will be documented. And we'll say this real quick, too. If maybe you've been trying to handle something on your own and you're working with an insurance company right now, give Kevin a call, as we said, free consult, and let him take a look at that. And maybe we can talk about that in a future segment again. But Kevin will take a look at that. And, hey, if you've got a certain amount of money on the table, Kevin, you say, hey, we'll let you keep that. And if I think I can get you more, we'll do an agreement on what you can get them.
Exactly. And so, just the percentage of what we get them. Absolutely.
That's a win-win deal.
Yep, absolutely it is.
Kevin, always great information. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Legal Talk, and we appreciate you being with us. Hope you have a great rest of your afternoon. Don't go anywhere. This is Haystack Help Radio, and we'll be right back.
Call now for a free consultation with Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886, or visit fleshlawfirm.com. That's FLESCH, fleshlawfirm.com. A proven team dedicated to your legal needs.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
Can you believe how low rates are staying? Still in the twos. Back in the 40s and the 50s, rates were in the 5-6% range. How much longer are you going to wait? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Your home has never been worth more. Take AIM to get that lower rate or shorten your term. Lower your payment and pay thousands less in interest. It's your money. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable Interest Mortgage. Locally owned and family operated since 2001. Are you ready for the future financially? Many of our clients have the ability to access their equity for 30 years without raising their payments now. This prepares them for those speed bumps of life. Ask how you can become mortgage safe too. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where a reputation of putting you first and listening to you is unmatched in Colorado. Call 720-895-0500 now so you can focus on what's important, family. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
David R. Cishon, certified estate planner and registered financial consultant, specializes in working with people who are planning for retirement and retired clients who want to preserve and grow their assets.
Education is the greatest equalizer is my theme. It's always been. More people know, the better their decisions are, the more comfortable they become. So when people come in, we take, some people say, an excessive amount of time learning about the client themselves. Who they are, what are their feelings? I don't care how much assets they have. If their assets are important to them, that's critical to me.
Call now for your free consultation with David C. Sean of Householder Group, 720-482-1917. That's 720-482-1917. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Householder Group Estate and Retirement Specialist, LLC, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
You're listening to KLZ 560 AM, your home station.
It's time for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins. Dr. Ben is committed to helping patients find the root cause of their health problems. Increase your vitality to live your fullest life without drugs and surgery. Now, here's your host, Dan Muir.
Welcome to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben. My name is Scott Whatley, and I am filling in for host Dan Muir today, and a pleasure to do so. And we are always good to have, it's always good to have Dr. Ben Galliart with us. Dr. Ben, how are you, sir?
Oh, doing great. Beautiful day out here, just getting some vitamin D.
Man, it is beautiful. I think it's going to be really pretty here for a couple of days. So, man, that is excellent. Hey, real quick, I watch all of your posts, but I saw one the other day you did on the mask and all that. Just real quick, on this whole CDC thing and all these different things, when you look at the last, 14, 15 months of all this, man, what in the world? It is the most, I don't even know if there is really a good official person that knows what they're doing in that arena.
Yeah, it's really reactive, and I see it almost like the war on terror. Remember yeah. when the shoe bomber tried to bring these shoe bombs onto the plane? And so guess what? Then everybody has to take their shoes off. And it wasn't like, hey, let's take our shoes off to be preventative or to kind of be ahead of the curve. No, they did it after somebody already did it. It tried to do the shoe bomb, and you're like, well, now who's going to do that? Because somebody already tried it.
Sure.
So it's really been reactive and a lot less of a The thing that gets me is when people say you've got to trust the science. And and by saying you've got to trust the science actually is anti-science, because science in and of itself is not a set thing. So mm-hmm. there's and if it is, that's a law. That's what we call a law in the field of science.
Sure.
Gravity is a law. So you can trust that science, but most everything else, it's still up for debate. It is still up for investigation and research. And what we know now, get this, there's something called the PDR, the physician's desk reference, and that goes and tells the doctor that's prescribing that medication, and it'll tell him, hey, these are contraindications, it's also used for this condition, all these different things. But they say that every 7 years, if you're still using that PDR from 7 years ago, mm-hmm. it's obsolete, and you're going off of information that is not accurate. So what do you do? So then was 7 years ago and it wasn't accurate? Well, it was what it was. It was the best they had at that time. And unfortunately, in today's day and age, a lot of people are putting their political views in, their economic views. People have gotten very, very wealthy yeah. off of this quote-unquote pandemic that we've been having. And just one example, there was a survey done, and people that watch mainstream media, CNN, MSNBC, some of those, they when they interviewed them about COVID, they said that there was a 50-50 chance if they got COVID that they would have to go to the hospital. That's what they thought the statistics were, when in reality it's less than 5%, closer to 1% chance of having to go to the hospital.
Right.
And yet the people that are being fed this information over and over and over, they think that it's a very good likelihood that they're going to go to the hospital, and it's probably another 50-50 that they're going to die if they go to the hospital.
Right.
And yet that's not the reality. But guess what? They keep coming back and watching that mainstream media and looking for the next thing. I was just, for a lot of my posts, I look and I scour some of the websites and just see what the mainstream media is telling people. And CNN the other day, it had one that said, are we going to run out of gas this summer? Or there's a chance that we run out of gas this summer. And you're like, I mean, what chance is that? Like 0.01% or something?
Exactly.
It's sensationalism. And so they put this up. And same thing, all these COVID things and everything. And so, unfortunately, there's so many people, so many powers that are trying to gather more oomph from this that it just really puts a second guess on almost anything that you hear or see. Is, you know, what is the underlying idea that they're trying to get across here? Who's trying to benefit? And that's what is sad about this, is that it's not really coming from a place of you know, consistent truth of what we think is best. It's reactive and led by a lot of other things.
Absolutely. Once again, our show is brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, and Phoenix. And, you know, Dr. Ben, with your growth and with the functional medicine side here, it just kind of shows you that all over the country, man, I don't care where you go, people are looking for answers and are not really finding it in the traditional model of medicine with just your regular MDs.
Absolutely. And we're opening up Nashville June 1st. We've just signed our lease on the location, have our doctor in place. A lot of great things are happening. And this really came to fruition over the last couple of years as our practice expanded and our reach expanded. And just yesterday I had a lady drive over from Ogallala, Nebraska, 3 hours each way. A lady today, Grover, Colorado, 2.5 hours each way. Had a lady come down from Douglas, Wyoming this morning, from Gillette yesterday, from all over the place. And it doesn't matter. Small towns, 800-person Gothenburg, Nebraska. We have multiple families from that one little 800-person town that drive over to see us. All the way to big city, you know, Denver, Littleton, Centennial. That doesn't matter. People are looking. People are looking for answers. They're looking for solutions. And they've been let down by this traditional medical model where you go in, they within 20 seconds is what the research shows, they've already got an idea of what medication to prescribe, and then they just go through, okay, let's run you through, but never getting to that underlying why. A great example is the thyroid, and so many people are on thyroid medication. Over 20 million people are on thyroid prescription in this country, and yet not a single person has ever been fixed. Yeah. By going on thyroid medication.
Sure.
Some of them need it, and some truly have low thyroid, and that's a thing. But it's not in that model to figure out why that's out of balance. And so that's where we come in, and we say, okay, is it Hashimoto's, meaning autoimmune thyroid? Well, if it is, let's calm down that immune reaction that's attacking its own tissue. Is it underconverting? Well, if it is, that's usually in the liver or the gut, so let's work on those so that we can convert T4 to T3, or whatever else is going on. We've got to take that step back and figure out the underlying why.
Absolutely. And, you know, you and Dan, you did a show recently on the brain mapping, and I caught most of that show, and then I saw a recent post on the neurofeedback. But just to go back to the brain mapping just a little bit, and for maybe those that didn't catch it, who would be a good client for that? I mean, if you say, hey, if you're feeling, you know, this, and this, you know, hey, come see us, and that may be an option for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's the thing. If you come see us, you're going to get a brain map regardless. That's how important the brain is and how we've gone over the last 5-10 years as we've really brought in the neurofeedback side and brain mapping, is that everybody gets a brain map. And that doesn't mean that everybody needs neurofeedback, but everybody gets a brain map because I need to know how much of somebody's issues are related to what's going on in their brain versus what's going on in the metabolic state. Metabolic state is going to be liver, gut, thyroid, adrenals, all of those issues. And so some people, it mostly is metabolic, but other people, it's a lot of the brain. And so I'll give you an example. On Tuesday, had a patient come in. She's a sophomore in high school in Windsor, up here in northern Colorado, and she had been getting D's and F's all the way since fifth grade. Room was a mess. Just mom pushing her all the time, trying to get her to do it, but she just the girl just could not get her life in order. And we did a brain map and found that she had this focus wave issue where she just could not stay in that present moment and stay engaged. And we went through, did neurofeedback, did the brain training. Mom brought in 4 boxes of Girl Scout cookies. I did not eat the Girl Scout cookies, but it was a sweet gesture. And the reason she brought that, because she's getting straight A's this semester. First time ever.
Wow.
Her room is clean. Her backpack is organized. She's turning things in on time. She's happy again. And mom was in tears because she had never imagined that this would actually work and that it could actually have the success that it does. So people with ADD, adults, there's tons of adults that have ADD or focus issues, ADD-like symptoms. People that have anxiety, people that have depression, insomnia is huge. Insomnia is rampant. We've talked a lot about sleep, mm-hmm. and on my Facebook page, YouTube channel, tons of videos on sleep on there. If you haven't seen our Facebook page, Functional Medicine Center, Fort Collins, Phoenix and Nashville, and we've got almost 33,000 followers now on the page there, and you know, tons of good information, 400 videos. We post multiple times a week, so keep up to date there. But yeah, that's a big part of it, is really just figuring out where those imbalances are in the brain, and then we can course correct these different conditions. So many of our patients come in and their gut's off and their inflammation's off. They can't lose weight, but they also have a little bit of anxiety, or they have a little bit of insomnia, and we do the brain map. And if we can change someone's brainwave pattern, get them out of that fight or flight, that is going to make a tremendous difference in their adrenal glands and their ability to heal and their ability to sleep. All these different systems are going to start changing if we can get that brain where it needs to be.
Dr. Ben Galliard is our guest. Once again, you're listening to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben. Their number, 970-282-1173. You can check out their website, fmcenters.com. Because, you know, until I heard your show there and, of course, watching your videos, I don't think most people think of, if you say, hey, look, what do you want to get healthy? Most people may name a lot of different things, but we don't really think of our brain. But yet when you think of the importance of the brain, you know, controlling, you know, nervous system, thoughts, memory, movement, everything, that's a big deal to concentrate on, isn't it?
Oh, I've talked about this this patient from, he's at CSU, 23 years old. He's having, he was having 20 bowel movements a day and having full-blown diarrhea. This was for 4 to 5 years, and he's only 23 years old. He's down to 1 to 2 a day in 4 weeks, and they're mostly solid. And the amazing part is we didn't go in and, you know, change the diet so dramatically or do all these probiotics and all these pills and supplements and all these things. He pointed to the room where we do the brain map and the neurofeedback. He said, you know, that's one of the main reasons why this is different, is that he's gotten out of this anxiety state, gotten out of this fight or flight state that was triggering his body to have all of these bowel movements a day. Another lady that, you know, was just freaking out all the time, and normally with something like that shooting in Boulder at the King Supers, she would have gone to the grocery store for 3 months, would have just been so worried about her kids or anything else. She was able to go the next day. Yes, she was a little worried. She looked around, but she could rationalize it. She could talk herself through that fear of going to the store and being shot and everything else. And so this is what we see. People can sleep again. They can be calm. Their depression starts going away. We can see phenomenal results with doing the neurofeedback. The amazing part, 2013, the FDA approved the brain map as a diagnostic tool. So this is FDA approved as a diagnostic tool. We can tell all types of different things from that brain map, and it's been used since back in the 70s, and yet it's still not recommended very much, and it's still kind of on the outskirts, which is just so disappointing, because we could change the face of ADD in schools. We could do so many different things if people would embrace the model and truly want to get their kids healthy, want to get themselves healthy, and make those long-term changes.
Right. And I believe you said, when I was listening to the show on the brain mapping, you said there's five different areas that in the brain that it kind of checks out.
Yeah, so we look at the delta wave, and that's going to be our slow sleep wave. So a lot of people, they're going to have a high delta wave. So it's like driving a stick shift. I can't use this analogy with the with millennials, but it's like driving a stick shift and you forget to shift out of first gear. Mm. And that motor is all revved up. You're still in first gear, but you're going 30 miles an hour.
Right.
And so sleep is going to be very challenging. Very rarely will that person get a good night's restorative sleep. And so we can help change people's sleep patterns by working on that delta. Another one of those sleep waves is the beta. The beta is what the young girl, the high school girl, was having with the focused issues. So that's the fast wave, focus wave, and that's going to be most active when someone's sitting here learning, listening, paying attention, even being engaged with your spouse or kids or whatever. And we see it so many times that that beta is low, hard time staying focused, hard time staying engaged, hard time connecting with people. If it's really low, that's even what is called Asperger's, which is kind of like, if you remember Rain Man,
sure,
where somebody just can't connect with anybody. And that's, if somebody comes in with Asperger's, it's like slam dunk. We're going to see dramatic changes. They're going to be more present, pick up their room, talk to their parents more, do all these different things, because we can bring that focus wave up, and that's a big part of solving that ADD crisis. But then the opposite of that is high beta. So what's over focus? What's that feel like?
An extreme focus,
hypervigilant. Yep. Almost obsessive, hard time shutting it down. And so people are going to ruminate and they're going to keep thinking about, oh man, I should have done that. Or why did my spouse say that? Some of you guys might be able to think about that with their, their spouse, their wife hasn't forgot for 20 years if they said that one thing or forgot a card on their birthday or whatever. That can be that high beta where it's just hard time letting that go. And so they can just keep mulling that over and over and over. But here's the thing. If we're in this high anxiety worry state or rumination state, that brain continuing to spin, that is going to keep somebody in what is called a sympathetic dominant state. Sympathetic dominant is that fight or flight. And guess what? You can do fight or flight or resting and digesting. You can't do both at the same time.
That's true. Absolutely. Once again, you're listening to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben. Their number, 970-282-1173. And real quick, before we get into the neurofeedback you just did a post on, looking at two, didn't really realize the big relationship between our gut and brain. Because I think so many times people are doing all these things and they're not getting anywhere and getting like that hamster on a wheel. And yet what you're saying is, hey, you know what? It could be just the brain issue. You got to get corrected before anything else is going to work right.
Absolutely. So think about this. I always use the analogy up here by Fort Collins, there's Horsetooth Mountain here, and there was a guy a couple years ago that got jumped by a mountain lion. Mm-hmm. Mountain lion jumped him and it was a baby mountain lion, but it's still like 40, 50 pounds. And if you've ever been attacked by a like barn cat or anything like that, you're like, I wouldn't be scratched by that. That's an 8-pound cat, let alone a 50-pound cat. So regardless of whether it was an adult or kid or whatever, it was a mountain lion. Jumped on this guy, and he was able to fight it off. He actually killed the mountain lion, drove himself to the hospital, and kind of a cool story. But what I always look at is he was in true survival, true fight or flight, and his digestive tract was not firing. His body's like, I need to survive. I don't care about digesting that breakfast burrito I had this morning or whatever it is. And so the body quit producing enzymes. It quit producing stomach acid. The motility, which is the actual muscle contraction of squeezing food through that digestive tract, that stopped working. And that digestive tract was basically not working at all. And this is what happens day in and day out with people that are having digestion issues and are in this chronic fight or flight pattern, is that they are going to not be producing those enzymes, not be producing that stomach acid. Their digestion is not going to work. So they can take enzymes, they can take all these different things trying to get the digestion improving, antacids, anything at all. And yet, until they go in and actually change their brain, get out of that fight or flight, they're not going to be digesting like they need to.
Wow. All right. So kind of explain your post here recently on neurofeedback and kind of what that entails.
Yeah. So the neurofeedback is actually the training process. So we go from the part of the diagnostics, which is the brain map. And so we do the diagnostics. We look at where those imbalances are, what we need to do differently. And then from there, we say, okay, can we actually train these brainwave patterns to do something different? And that's the neurofeedback. That's where we jump in. We start teaching these brainwaves to go higher or lower, depending on what we see in the map. And the great part when we do neurofeedback is there's a permanency. So these brainwaves are going to change, and for the vast majority of people, they're going to change permanently, and we do not have to go back and ever touch these again. So That's the great part with neurofeedback. It's easy, simple. That 15-year-old girl that's been doing neurofeedback and getting straight A's now, she would come in, sit down, we would monitor those brainwaves for about 30 minutes. She'd watch Amazon, Netflix, Disney, some type of TV, and the brain would just pay attention and watch that. And then the computer, as soon as those brainwaves went up too high or down too low, the screen and sound fade. And then as soon as the brain finds the good range that it's supposed to be in, it gets rewarded and comes back on, and then it goes out to the old pattern, and then it comes back on, and it does it again and again and again until finally the brain learns, hey, if I'm going to get into this good deep sleep state and stay there, I need to stay in this range, stay in this good area that the screen is on in. And then when you're in the middle of the night, or when you're starting to get a panic attack or feeling anxious or depressed or whatever it is, your brain will jump back into the good range on its own.
Wow, that's cool. So just overall, I mean, what are some things that most of us can do to kind of help keep our brain healthy?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I wrote my first book, all about the brain. And I've got two parts in there. One, the first half is the things that are going to cause damage to the brain. The second half is going to be things that are going to repair the brain. And so in that first half, we look at, it's not just, oh, what magic herbs am I going to be able to take,
right,
or what food is going to be the best for my brain. We have to stop the damage first, and then we can start the repair. And so that's a big part of what I look at is, can we stop the damage? So then you look at some of the things that damage the brain. Chronic stress. So if somebody's in this chronic fight or flight pattern like we've talked about, that's a huge part of it. And then we've got the part where if somebody's having, if they've had head injuries, if they've are exposed to mold, there's a lot of different things that can contribute to that neurodegeneration. You know, even certain medications are going to do that. We talk about the microbiome, which is the good bacteria and bad bacteria. Blood sugar is a huge part of that. That's my second book, Blood Sugar Doesn't Lie. We know that they call Alzheimer's type 3 diabetes. Well, if somebody's blood sugar is high enough, long enough, they're going to start to neurodegenerate, and especially in the brain. So all these different things that are going to cause neurodegeneration, and then we get into some things that are going to actually fix the brain. And that's where you can do neurofeedback like we've been talking about. You can do different types of oxygen therapy. Live O2, LIVEO2.com is a great home unit that people can use to oxygenate their brain. You look at the hyperbaric chamber as another one for oxygen. There are certain supplements that are going to be helpful. Pine bark extract, glutathione, some different nutrients that are really powerful healers for brain conditions.
Wow.
Certain foods are going to be beneficial.
Yeah.
More fats. Most people have kind of vilified fats in their diet, but actually fats are really, really important. The brain is made up of about 70% fat.
So we need those good fats on a regular basis. My wife is an expert in what's called BDNF in the exercise field, and how BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, is going to help heal, and the brain will start healing those damaged areas and repair and replace neurons around those damaged areas. But you've got to have movement for that, and even some higher intensity movement. So if people have heard of HIIT workouts, or doing like a 5 to 10 minute little energy boost, or getting on a stationary bike and doing some sprints, things like that actually can help regenerate and rebuild the brain.
Right. You know what I guess is amazing to me is just all the different stories that you tell, and you know, I love when you do your client kind of stories, because it just shows everybody's body is different. And I don't care if you're 15 like the one patient you're talking about, or you're 80. You know, there is no one just perfect thing for everybody, because all of our bodies are different, right?
Yeah, it is so true. Yeah, I'm gonna and but you as well here. And but we know that physiologically we've got the same pattern
yep.
going too. And so if
mm-hmm.
I see somebody's high iron, and as their first marker on the blood work, I know that they've got high triglycerides and their insulin's up and their fatty liver's kicking in, and that they've got C-reactive protein high, and all these different markers are going to be high just from seeing that iron. So we're individual in that not every case of Hashimoto's autoimmune thyroid is going to get the same process to fix it. We're going to do a bunch of different things depending on the person to fix that. But we also know that if part of that Hashimoto's autoimmune thyroid means that they've got some insulin resistance and that going on, we know the inflammatory cascade that's coming. So it's kind of both sides to it. Yes, we're individuals and we've got to treat everybody uniquely, and we don't just put somebody on a protocol. But we also know that, okay, well, if that liver is off, we know probably why it's off and what we need to do differently and go through that whole process. And so that's what I love about this work, and why we get the results that we do, is that it is individualized to that person. But we also do know what to work on with people. I've been doing this for over 20 years. The method that I've put together is this tool that we're bringing to the masses across the country. And for anybody out there that is looking for those solutions, looking to take massive action, give us a call, 970-282-1173, and you'll speak with Alicia. She's amazing at what she does, but her biggest objective is to make sure that you're the right fit. We don't want to waste your time.
Sure.
We don't want to waste our time. We're a month or two out to get new patients in, but that's because we love helping people from all over, and it's just such a great thing to see people step up, fulfill their fate and their destiny to be a healthy person and be a vital person. And that's the big thing that I look at, is we were designed to be healthy and to be vibrant, and that's what we like to give people.
Absolutely. And I think now's the time that this last year or so it's taught us, hey, now's the time to take control of your health, because if you don't, it will take control of you. So a lot better to be on the offensive end there.
Absolutely.
Dr. Ben, always good, and thank you so much, and we'll look forward to your show next week, sir.
Awesome. All right. Take care, and everybody, you make it a great week and stay strong out there.
All right. That's Dr. Ben Galyart. Once again, our show has been brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, and Phoenix, 970-282-1173, fmcenters.com. Thanks for joining us today for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben.
Thank you for joining us for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben. Contact the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins now by visiting functionalmedicinefortcollins.com or call 970-716-0079. Join Dan Muir and Dr. Ben next time right here on KLZ.